leading astronomer at the University of Arizona, discovered Sirius C, an Earth-sized planet orbiting a star that was less than 9 light-years away, so close that the International Astronautical Authority launched a plan to get visual imagery of the world that the popular news media dubbed New Earth. Suddenly, Ulrich was seized by a frenzy. Cellini was already constructing a radio telescope facility on the far side of the moon. Why not build an optical interferometer that could image Sirius C before the IAA's grandiose plan for space-borne telescopes could be completed? Insisting that Cellini could gain enormous prestige from the project, Ulrich faced the Lunar Nation's governing council in a white fury of ambition. They decided to study his proposal, which Ulrich took as a polite way of refusing him. Just as when a father tells his importuning child, "We'll see," what he really means is no, but he doesn't want to have an argument about it. Desperate, Ulrich sought an audience with Douglas Stavanger, the retired leader of Cellini, the man who had directed the community during its earliest years, who had led Cellini's brief, almost bloodless fight for independence, who had chosen the very name for the Lunar Nation. Stavanger, still Cellini's éminence gris, despite his apparent youth, smiled at Ulrich's enthusiasm and agreed with him. Cellini should be the first to obtain visual imagery of New Earth. Cellini's governing council agreed to support the project, minimally, which led Ulrich to seek additional funding from the McClintock Trust. He had not expected the scion of the McClintock clan would actually come to the Farside Observatory and interfere with his operation. But Ulrich was determined to do whatever was necessary to make Farside Observatory succeed. His one chance for a Nobel Prize was at his fingertips. Almost. Teleoperations Center. The room felt strangely crowded to Ulrich, stuffy and hot, even though there were only 3 people in it. The professor had been informed that Grant Simpson had returned to Farside the morning after Ulrich had ordered McClintock to bring him back. But when Ulrich tried to reach Simpson on the phone to discuss the engineer's meeting with Dr. Cardenas, he received a recorded statement. "I'm unable to speak with you at the moment. Please leave your name and a brief message, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can." "Unable to speak with me?" Ulrich fulminated. The nerve of the man. He asked the people monitoring the surveillance cameras that watched over every public space in the facility to locate Simpson. Within a minute, they reported that Simpson was in the teleoperations center. For all of 3 minutes, Ulrich drummed his fingers on his desktop. "Too busy to answer my call, is he?" His first impulse was to go down to the teleoperations center and let Simpson know in no uncertain terms that when he's called by the chief of the Farside Observatory, he'd better answer right then and there. But then he thought that it would be beneath him to go searching for one of his employees. "Simpson should come to me. I'm his superior. He works for me." "But I need him," the professor admitted to himself. "He's the only man around here who seems to be able to get things done." At any rate, Ulrich felt safer in his own office behind his own familiar desk. "Why go traipsing through the corridors if you don't have to?" he asked himself. "Why risk blundering into an embarrassing wrong turn?" Finally, though, he decided to sacrifice his dignity a little and go to the teleoperations center. "Show them that I can go anywhere I decide to go," he thought, "that I'm not a prisoner of my own office. I want to talk with Simpson. I want to talk with him now. I'll make him understand that when I call, he comes. Or else." He got up from his desk and started for the teleoperations center, his face set in a grim mask of determination, his fingers brushing along the wall of the corridor as he walked. But as he strode down the narrow, rock-walled corridor, his irritation eased somewhat. No sense making a scene, he told himself. "Go to the teleoperations center as if you're checking on how the work is going. A good leader looks in on his people from time to time. Talk to Simpson from a position of authority, not like a helpless blind man or an angry fishwife." So when he slid open the door to the teleoperations center, Ulrich was quite composed and ready to speak to Simpson in a reasonable manner. For several heartbeats, Ulrich stood just inside the door, feeling tense and sweaty in the small, poorly ventilated room. He knew there were 4 consoles standing against the far wall. Simpson had to be at one of them. Then he heard Simpson's voice. Almost there, Josie. Josie. Ulrich mentally riffled through his personnel file. Josefina Rivera, one of the technicians. Hispanic-American, age 26, degrees in electronics and software engineering. Ulrich coughed softly to get their attention. He sensed the woman turning to look over her shoulder at him. Simpson remained with his back to him. The woman half whispered, "Grant?" "Not now," Simpson snapped. She lapsed into silence. Stiffening, Ulrich called, "Mr. Simpson!" "Not now," he repeated louder. Ulrich felt a blaze of anger surge through him. "He's working one of the tractors," Josefina Rivera explained, "loading the last section of the mirror frame onto a flatbed." "Almost finished," Simpson called out, still without turning away from the screen. Seething, Ulrich debated storming out of the room. But what would that accomplish, he asked himself. "I've come this far. I'd look foolish if I left now." So he stood there, folding his arms across his chest, and waited as Simpson operated the tractor outside. From what Ulrich could gather, the task of disassembling the mirror frame was almost completed. He pictured the dowdy little tractor trundling around the perimeter of the mirror and taking the last remaining section of the frame in its metal grippers. Slowly, carefully, it was tugging the frame loose from the mirror, then lifting it and stowing it in the trailer with the rest of the disconnected sections. All in response to the motions Simpson made on the console's joystick and dials. Ulrich admitted to himself that none of his staff could work the teleoperations consoles as well as Simpson could. To the young woman, Simpson said, "That's the way it's done, Josie. If Harvey had kept his butt in here and done the job right, he wouldn't have gotten himself hurt." Ulrich pictured the young woman's face, outlined against the glow of the console's screen. "Harvey can't handle the controls the way you can, Grant," she said, her voice brimming with admiration. "Then he ought to learn." "Mr. Simpson," Ulrich called, steel in his voice. Simpson turned in his squeaking chair, then got slowly to his feet. "Professor," he said, by way of acknowledgement. "Nothing more." "I expected you to report to my office this morning," said Ulrich, "to tell me about your meeting with Dr. Cardenas." Sounding almost embarrassed, Simpson said, "I filed a report last night, soon as I arrived back here. Didn't you get it?" "I want a personal report," Ulrich snapped. "Oh." A heartbeat's hesitation, then Simpson said, "I thought it was important to get the mirror frame taken apart and get it ready for shipment over to Cellini."
"That is important, yes," Ulrich conceded. "But your report to me should come first."
He sensed Simpson's shoulders slumping slightly. "I thought my written report would do, and I wanted to get the frame off to Cellini as soon as possible." The woman said,
"I'll call the transportation people and schedule a lobber flight for the frame, Grant."
"Thanks, Josie," Simpson replied.
"Come with me," said Ulrich, reasserting his authority. "You can tell me about your meeting with Dr. Cardenas on the way back to my office."
"But there's more to do here," Simpson objected.
"You can do it when you come back from my office," Ulrich insisted.
"Yes, sir," said Grant Simpson. Very reluctantly, Ulrich thought. In the corridor. "There's not all that much to tell," Simpson said as he walked alongside Ulrich along the corridor. The professor knew from tactile representations of his staff's personnel dossiers that Simpson was just about his own height, much broader in the body, wide shoulders and a solid frame, but the man's arms and legs were short and thick. They made him appear squat.
"Dr. Cardenas is willing to help us?" Ulrich asked.
"Almost eager," Simpson replied. "That's why I wanted to get the mirror frame to her as soon as possible. She's already analyzing samples of optical glass that Cellini's glass factory gave her."
"That's good," Ulrich conceded. Then a new worry struck him. "But how is she to be paid for her work? We can't afford a big addition to our budget."
"From what I could make out," Simpson answered, "she's got a pretty good discretionary budget of her own from Cellini. She won't be a drain on our finances."
"For now," Ulrich said. "When it comes to actually building the mirrors..."
"That should cost less than spin-casting them. And it'll go a lot faster than spin-casting, too."
"And how will we transport the mirrors from Cellini?" Ulrich demanded. "You couldn't get one of them across the ring wall without cracking it." If the remark stung Simpson, Ulrich couldn't tell.